Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 239, The Last Jedi Approaches. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Poe Dameron to my big deal Finn, we have Carl Eclair.
Jason came out of retirement just for this. Woo! No, not retirement, but... Oh my god, that sizzle reel was so good. I was like, we have to talk about this. There's just no way we can just wait until August to talk about this.
No. And it's just like, Armageddon Star Wars!
Well, I mean, we didn't get anything at San Diego Comic-Con, which we knew beforehand. They announced that there wasn't going to be any sort of Star Wars presence there. Right. And then, you know, D23 here down in... Was this in Anaheim? Yeah, it was in Anaheim. I know Riley Blanton of Star Wars Report got to go, which is awesome. And they gave us this amazing sizzle reel. We also got this incredible, like, you know, the cast was, there was more of the cast there than there was at Celebration. I mean, for Last Jedi, that is.
Right. Yeah. No, there was a lot of them there. And they gave us these really cool posters too, where everyone's like costume is all red. And everyone's like, what does the red mean? And I'm like, well, I don't know. It looks cool, though.
And how interesting, but I guess I'm just going to jump right into things. But yeah, how interesting on the poster with Luke that he's holding his old lightsaber, right? Like he's not holding his Return of the Jedi blade.
That has me a little bit sad.
I'm really hoping he uses his green lightsaber.
Me too.
So, I mean, it could just be, again, a publicity stunt, right? Like, I mean, right. We never saw Rey holding the lightsaber until after the movie in any sort of media campaign. So that doesn't mean much right now.
Exactly. That's true.
And if anything, it could be his, right? Like, he has, it could just simply be the symbol of him accepting Rey's invitation to train her.
True. Or,
right? Like, he's accepted, like, this is what brought her to him, so he's accepted it. And he's going to, you know, move forward and become part of our story again.
Right.
My gosh, though, Jason, there is so much good stuff in this sizzle reel to talk about.
Yes.
I love the term sizzle reel. Sizzle reel.
Sizzle.
This reel fresh from the grill. It's a sizzle reel.
Sizzle. Man. Sizzle.
So just to get it fresh in all of our heads, I'm going to play this again because there's a lot of, I mean, there's so much talking in it, which is great from the cast and crew. Well, mostly the cast and occasionally Rian Johnson. So I'm going to play this just so it's fresh in all of our heads, and then we're going to dive right into it. Does that sound good?
That sounds perfect.
Let's do it.
Do it.
Everybody set? 3, 2, 1.
Action.
Episode 8. Gosh. The first film didn't even have a number.
Rian has written a story that's unexpected, but right. Some of the stuff that happens, people are going to be like, oh my God.
Even though I think I know it all, they throw things at me story-wise I never could have imagined.
And even though everybody knows that it's the second in a trilogy, it feels like its own thing.
Star Wars is so cool because there's all these creatures and all these amazing visual effects. But all the characters are also so complex.
Rian needs to work on his Wookiee sounds. It's ridiculous. New director, can't even just learn a Wookiee sound.
It feels like the storylines are becoming more established. We're really getting to know these new characters. Also with the characters that we know and love, we're seeing their lives change.
Everything is being shifted in the opposite way to what the audience expected after 7. Ryan's made Star Wars fresh and new.
I'm hoping it'll be a little shocking, but I'm hoping it'll feel real and honest.
It's our most ancient story of good against evil, told in the most fascinating way. But it has a real spiritual depth to it.
It's about family, and that's what's so powerful about it.
It's a wrap!
So, what do you think?
Oh, man. As if they couldn't have given us a more epic video, and then they just give you the gut punch at the end with Carrie Fisher saying, it's all about family, you know? It's like,
So
I love it, though.
Yeah.
I love it.
Every time I watch it still, like, I just teared up. I'm getting the chills. This made me feel. The trailer we got at Orlando didn't do much for me. I mean, it was cool. I mean, part of it was like being crammed in with like thousands of people and that rude guy right in front of us. Remember that just budged in front and just stood there like a jerk?
Yeah.
That soured the experience. But yeah, I mean, the trailer was good. I rewatched the trailer a couple of times since this has come out. Because I just wanted to like see if it got me more excited. And the trailer, I'm excited in light of this, but it's just interesting that a sizzle reel behind the scenes look got me more excited than the trailer itself. But yeah, I mean, that's, to me, that's the already like monumental success of what they've done with this little tease is they've made me feel, and that's what I love about Star Wars. I want to feel it. And I felt this in all the right places.
I know, I get it. It was definitely something more than what we got with the trailer, and I think largely, you know, the trailer was there to like show everybody, hey, The Last Jedi is going somewhere new. It's going somewhere different. It's going somewhere that you're not expecting, and it's teasing us that because it's obviously the teaser trailer, and then this is our first real look at what that new direction is, and we're getting more of an idea of, you know, from the cast of their perspective of it. And there's some great quotes in here. I think the one that really stands out to me the most is Daisy Ridley saying that
it's unexpected but right.
Yes, it's unexpected but right.
Yeah, that's the first thing I wrote down too. Yeah, I mean, it's right at the top of it too, right? I mean, after you get this really cool blast of crate dust, you know, like, it's obvious that that's the planet of crate. I'm so excited to check out that planet. Which again, like, just quick side note, like, this is something too, like, I feel like we're gonna get some cool planets. Force Awakens, the planets were nothing spectacular in my book. They were all fine, but part of Star Wars, right, is like really good planets, and it just crate in and of itself is enough to satisfy that need of something new as far as a planet goes. Because there was no new settings in Force Awakens. Like, we've had Hoth, we've had a snowy planet, we've had a forest planet, we've definitely had Tatooine.
Yep.
So, and again, I'm not crapping on Force Awakens. I mean, we all know like what people's quibbles are about it. You know, obviously it was reigniting the spark of the OT, but it's very clear that this is going to be something very different. And that's the first thing I wanted to key in on too, Jason, is talk about, you know, Daisy, and they're going to talk about this kind of theme throughout this sizzle reel, is the idea that this is something new. And John Boyega later says, you know, it's Ryan's made Star Wars fresh and new again. And I think that's awesome. Like, I think they're all aware that Force Awakens, in a way, was a rehash. I don't think it's just a New Hope 2.0, but it definitely capitalized on what the OT gave us. Which is fine.
Right.
That's how they drew everybody back in. But they're making...
And you have to do that when you're remake. You know, it's in essentially, you know, restarting or remaking Star Wars again, in a sense, for a new generation.
Yeah. So I don't know. What do you... I mean, I love this idea that it's something unexpected.
Yes.
This, again, like everything that was said during this sizzle reel has made me do a complete 180 on all of my doubts about this movie. You know, everything I was like, well, you know, it sounded like Mark Hamill wasn't like, you know, and even he says in there, right? Like there's that line where he says, you know, even when I thought I knew everything, they throw stuff at me that changed it up, right?
Yes.
Like it's very clear that this is going to be a very different story. And that's what we all want, you know? I mean, as long as they don't like shake up the core of what is Star Wars, which I doubt they will. We want a different type of story. We want something new and unexpected. And that's so exciting. That's so exciting.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. And it's something that we definitely got when the prequels came out. It's definitely, you know, what we got from, you know, A New Hope to Empire and then to Jedi in the original trilogy. It's something new. It's something different. It's something exciting. It all follows the same thematic journey, in a sense, but it's always new. It's always different. It's always going a bit further than what the previous one did. So,
yeah. Oh, man. I have come to really believe in the unexpected. You know, I mean, just even thinking about my own life, all the great things in my life have always been unexpected. You know, meeting you at Fan Days, that was unexpected. You know, meeting all the wonderful, like, females I've had wonderful relationships in my life, always unexpected are the best ones. You know, finding a great new job or something is something often very unexpected, right? So I think for all of us who might be a little nervous that, like, oh, this is going to be very different, just think of how good unexpected things are, right? Like, think of something that was unexpected. Now, granted, there's bad unexpectations too, right? Like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Oh, great. Now I've, you know, got this horrible disease. That wasn't expected. Certainly, yes. Yeah, sometimes things that are unexpected aren't necessarily good. But I think at the end of the day, especially for something like Star Wars, like, if you want to keep telling the Star Wars story, if you want to expand the mythology here, you've got to do something unexpected. You can't just retell the same story.
No, you can follow the same themes. You can follow similar patterns, you know, the whole rhyming beats type of thing that we've seen before, but you can't keep doing the same thing. Yeah. And that's what I'm glad we're definitely getting with The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
There are hints and callbacks and shout outs and, you know, things design-wise that I think are amazing from what we are seeing here, because they take from just about everything and then throw in something new, like those little weird creatures, and I don't know the name, I forgot the name of them, that we're going to see.
The little puffins?
The what?
They're modeled after, like, puffins that are, like, that's the name of the actual bird over on Skellig Michael.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the creature either.
But they're going to be out there with Luke Skywalker.
Oh, man, and I'm so, like, excited about those things.
They look adorable. I've already seen people, change Twitter profile pictures to that.
Are
you
they
know.
Progs or like Prog? Is something like that? Porgs?
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Porg. I think it is a porg. Maybe you're right. But yeah, I mean, they throw something like that in there all of a sudden out of nowhere, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's totally different and yet totally Star Wars at the same time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, now that I'm using a new computer, I can actually look stuff up on the internet without killing the recording. So I'm going to look that up real quick. They're either porgs. I know it's something with a P.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a peek here. Porgs. Yeah. Porgs.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was one of my favorite things to see in the trailer it's not a trailer. But yeah, the porgs, they're so cute. And supposedly they're like, obviously, this is a tiny bit of a spoiler, so I apologize if you like don't want to know anything about anything. But the Porgs are supposed to be like these watchers on Octu, and they're kind of like a spiritual element. So they commune with Luke. Like, I don't know if they're going to talk, right, or if maybe it's some sort of like communication via the Force. I have no idea about their mode of communication, but it seems as if they're protectors of the planet who, in a sense, welcome Luke in and maybe even watch over him and guide him, which I just think is so cool. Like, you know, the Ewoks, one of the essential elements of the Ewoks is that they were like innately attuned to the Force. Again, that's all in like expanded universe knowledge. It's not really given to us in Return of the Jedi, but I like this idea of kind of these like indigenous people who have like an innate spirituality.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, I think that's a very powerful story element. That
we totally got that in Rebels with, you know, the idea of the Lasat and,
right.
and their, connection to the Force, the Ashla, as they call it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was, you know, so let me say, like, one of the things that I was very excited to hear in this sizzle reel, because, obviously my favorite part of Star Wars is the spiritual mythological element. I mean, you know, the films that have that.
Totally surprised that that's your favorite part.
But whatever has that, you know, whatever has the most of that in a Star Wars film is going to be a Star Wars film that I'm going to love. And, you know, Gwendolyn Christie makes this comment about, she says, you know, it's the classic story of good against evil, but it's told in a fresh way. So again, the idea of it's something new. And she says there's a real, I wrote down the quote. It has a real spiritual depth. And I was like, yes. And as she's saying that, it's like that shot of Luke walking down Octu, like in his Jedi robes. Like, that's what I want. Yes. I want that back in Star Wars. And it's not that, I think Force Awakens definitely had some very clear elements of spirituality for sure. But I think Last Jedi is going to really build on the mythology surrounding the Force in a way that I don't think any Star Wars film has.
Right. This could outdo the Dagobah stuff in Empire.
Yeah.
It has the potential to do that, because we're going to definitely be spending quite a bit of time with Rey and Luke on Octu. Yeah. Or Octo, I've forgotten now.
Octu has a moon called God bless you.
Yes, Octu, bless you. yes, and that's BLESTYUE. Blessed you. There you go.
There you go. First element of expanded universe for Last Jedi.
And you heard it here first.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I'm really definitely excited about I'm glad to see that we're definitely, you know, sticking with the good versus evil and then getting the spiritual depth, because, you know, that's always kind of my biggest concern moving forward with Star Wars in this new modern era of filmmaking, is the idea that, oh, well, we need to make it grittier and darker and you know, less black and white in terms of the morality of everything, because that's what's expected. That's what's, you know, in right now in filmmaking. And that's always concerned me. You know, it's never been a huge concern, but moving forward, sometimes I get my doubts about things. And when I saw the trailer, that was sort of bubbling back up in the back of my mind. But after seeing this, I'm feeling a bit calmer in that aspect now. So,
yeah, I mean, well, just hearing that it's the battle of good against evil, right? I mean, even in the original trilogy, I mean, Vader is a black and white villain, really until Return of the Jedi. Like, just because he reveals himself to be Luke's father at the end of Empire doesn't mean, you know, that he's necessarily a good guy.
No,
because his motivations are purely evil by even revealing himself at that point. So it's okay. And that's very clearly Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren's character, while not Anakin 2.0 in any way, I don't think. You know, I think Kylo is going to be the gray character who is in the midst of evil, right? Like, he's the gray character who's being played upon. I'm really excited to see what happens with his character. By the way,
no, he's definitely not Anakin 2.0. Anakin gave up. He thought he wasn't good anymore. He thought he couldn't be good anymore. He gave up and accepted that this was his lot in life. And, you know, Kylo is very conflicted last we saw him. And we'll see how, you know, killing his father affects him. But, you know, I definitely am happy with the idea of Kylo being the primary antagonist, and how he's, you know, being tempted by the lights, you know, last time we saw him. And it's all so interesting and new and different, a different way to do it. So,
yeah. But, you know, going back real quickly to this element of spirituality in Star Wars, I find it very interesting how much they've been delving into the mythology of the Force in the new canon, right? I mean, you have them doing a ton of that in Rebels. Some of the comics have really been exploring it. You got, you know, the Guardians of the Wills in Rogue One, and plus the novel. You know, I mean, they're really expanding upon it. And I'm very curious as to kind of what's their end in sight for that, right? Like, why are they bringing that up so
right.
heavily? Which I'm personally very happy because it's my favorite part of Star Wars. But remember, the reason George Lucas gave us the Force, the fact that he made a science or a space fantasy as opposed to a science fiction film. You know, I was talking to, I don't remember who I was just talking to about this, but oh yeah, it was on the most recent episode of Tales of the Larians, which hasn't been posted yet. I'll post it later this week. But, you know, we had Bobby Gordon on and he's talking about how he's a big Star Trek fan as well. And we were talking essentially to me, the difference between like Star Wars and Star Trek is one is pure sci-fi. One is pure space fantasy, right? Star Wars is fantasy because of the Force. Because of that spiritual element. Star Trek is, it's just like a humanitarian cause. Like, we can all do great if we work together. There's nothing outside of yourself, though, that really helps in that process, right? It's like what I would call today secular humanism, like, which is very prevalent in like, liberal culture, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no room for religion, but there is room for secular humanism, which is basically religion without God. You know, but George Lucas purposely gave us the Force because we were a culture deprived of spirituality, deprived of fairy tales, deprived of something outside of ourselves that would call us to excel. So I'm really hoping that that is kind of the reason they're bringing the Force back in, right? I mean, I remember when I was reading through like the Making of the Force Awakens book that came out, you know, a few years ago. And one of the first things they were asking while they were storyboarding ideas was, why do we want to continue this story, right? Like, what does Star Wars still have to tell us? So I'm hoping that all of those who are, you know, part of this, the story group, see something in the Force, see something in its rich spiritual depth that will benefit our culture. And I'm hoping that's why they're exploring it so much. I hope it's not just like, oh, at the end of the day, the Force is really just everybody working together. Like, oh man, that would really belittle it, in my opinion. And oh, granted, for all of you listening who are not religious, I am not in any way trying to offend you. I know not everybody is religious and doesn't even necessarily see the Force as religious. I obviously do because of my own personal experience. I do think there is an element of that George purposely infused into it. But again, like, yes, it's not meant to be any particular sect or creed. It's meant to be ambiguous so that we can all find something there.
Yes, so it can all be, you know, we can all find elements of our own religious, you know, journey in there if we are religious. And I do like the fact that it looks like we're getting definitely a definite sense of, what's the word I'm looking for, of a structure, of a depth to what we're going to be seeing with the Force here. And it's not just everyone coming around a campfire singing Kumbaya and let's be kind to everyone. So, you know, it's there's definitely a depth. There's definitely a purpose and a lot of the things that have been coming out in Star Wars in the last couple of years have really been hammering that in, that there's a lot to the Force and it's a much broader and much, you know, more ingrained aspect of this universe than I think we had even thought to begin with. So, which makes me very excited and very happy.
Yeah. So. They gave a, at the expo, let me find this real quick. Okay, here we go. They gave like a very brief synopsis for The Last Jedi that was written up in at D23. Oh, darn it. Did I lose it? Hold on. Where is it? Crap, I should have looked this up beforehand. There was it was almost like, you know, like a tagline to promote the film. Oh, here we go. Found it. All right, wait 1 second. I'm going to read this for us. All right, so it says, in Lucasfilm's Star Wars The Last Jedi, the Skywalker saga... Wow, start over again. In Lucasfilm's Star Wars The Last Jedi, the Skywalker saga continues as the heroes of The Force Awakens join the galactic legends in an epic adventure that unlocks age-old mysteries of the Force and shocking revelations of the past. Interesting.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're making it very blatant that the Force is going to be a very powerful presence in this particular film. And yes. It makes sense, too, being that it's called The Last Jedi, right? I mean, we all know the last thing said in the teaser trailer by Luke is, it's time for the Jedi to end. Well, we can assume that something else, the Force is going to be calling for something else, or a new type of Jedi, at least. I think that's, you know, we're gonna learn a lot about the mythology of the Force. And also remember, Luke is at essentially the first Jedi temple on Octu. I think he went there to learn something new, to try something, to go back to the roots of what the Jedi Order was all about and try to recapture that, right? I mean, think of like in Christianity with the Reformation, right? The idea of the Reformation essentially was, let's go back to the roots of what it meant to be a Christian church and revitalize that rather than getting lost in all these, you know, ridiculous traditions. You know, it's something that would have served the Jedi Order well in the prequel era.
It would have. And unfortunately, they were so bound to the Senate and to the government that they couldn't. It's particularly not in wartime, you know, when they were being so dependent on, you know, it's, you can't just pull back and say, oh, sorry, you got to take care of ourselves right now. And they were definitely worked into a corner there.
Yeah. So again, I mean, I think, that's one of the huge takeaways I have from this sizzle reel is Star Wars is going to hit its spiritual roots again and give us something really to sink our teeth into.
Yes.
And I think that makes for great storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if Star Wars is going to continue to be a mythology, which I hope it does, it needs to speak to those like really just primal human experiences. It has to have something to say about the human condition, right? Like that's the fact that Star Wars has endured for over 40 years. You know, that's the reason that Harry Potter is going to continue to endure, you know, is because it taps into some of these like primal essences of being human and speaks to that and helps you understand life, helps you give you a lens through which to understand your own life. And it really like lifts the kind of the mundane into something wonderful. I think that's what Star Wars has the ability to do. I really think this movie is going to really capture that.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited. But there's, you know, in addition to all the you know, talk about the spirituality and the discussion here, there's some great shots in this thing.
Yes.
Do we want to move into that now?
Yeah. One last thing I want to say before we move into that. Actually two things, but they kind of go together. One thing, the name of the actress that plays Rose? Kathleen
Mary
Tran?
Tam.
Mary Tran?
Mary Tam, I think?
Okay.
Tam Tran?
I think it's Tran. Hold on. But,
You might be right. I'll look that up.
But she makes, you know, the comment that, like, these characters are all so complex, and everybody's going to change, both the new characters and our legendary characters, which essentially are Chewie, Luke, Leia, and then the droids. I don't think the droids really will ever change that much. They're going to continue to be the same.
Who is it? Kelly Marie Tran.
Kelly Marie Tran. There we go. It's just really, and this is typical of a second act to a three-part story, is in the second act, Empire did it. Attack of the Clones, in my opinion, tried to do it. I don't think it did a great job at it. But it's the part of the story where you really want to expand your characters. And what's the biggest concern is, what are these characters going through? And it really sounds like that's, again, no surprise, but that's what's going to be happening here. And that, you know, it just makes everything far more compelling because you're going to care about these characters so much more.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be good. It's going to be great.
Well, and then, of course, it ends with Carrie Fisher saying, it's all about family, and that's what makes it so powerful.
Carrie.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that. Go ahead.
I love the fact that, you know, they're not shying away from her being in this at all. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes you might back away out of, you know, wanting to be perceived as, you know, respectful of everything, but, you know, she's such an integral part of, you know, Star Wars moving forward at this point that, you know, you can't shy away from that. And to hear her continue, you know, to say, you know, in a continuing way that you know, it's all about family. That's what makes it so powerful is, you know, that also reaffirms one of the themes that we've seen all throughout the Star Wars saga to this point. You know, it is about family. You know, we got, you know, the family aspect in the original trilogy with, you know, Luke and Vader and Leia, you know, finding out they were all related. Then you had the whole aspect of, you know, creating that family, and what that family, how that family came into being in the prequels with Anakin and then Padme. And then finally, you know, where we got to at the end of Revenge of the Sith. So, you know, having Carrie say that makes me excited about the movie, but it also, you know, that was one of those, like I said at the beginning, that was sort of that gut punch at the, you know, they threw in there at the end, because it was just like, oh my gosh, it's so great to hear Carrie say that, but, you know, this is the last sort of time we're gonna really be able to hear her talk about that sort of thing.
Sure.
So
yeah, well, I love that she's the one saying it too, because it her daughter's in it too, right? Like,
yes.
And we also know that Billie Lord is the actress's name. What is her character's name again?
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't remember either. But she's going to have a bigger role. I don't know how big, but it's going to be bigger at least. I mean, it was tiny in Force Awakens, so saying that it's bigger doesn't necessarily mean a lot. But, like, how cool that, you know, I mean, and Carrie Fisher, time and time again, especially recently, whenever she reflects, you know, with people who ask, like, why do you think Star Wars is so popular? That's always the thing she seems to kind of, you know, hitch her rope to, is kind of this familial element of how, you know, she says it's stood the test of time because it's about family and people can share it with their family, right? Like, it's in the same way that Star Wars gave us both, you know, hereditary family and non-hereditary family. That's what Star Wars does to the culture, right? Like, I mean, it creates a family. Like, yes, it can strengthen the bonds in your own blood relatives, but also, right? I mean, look at Star Wars Celebration. It's a huge family reunion in a way.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, and like her saying that, again, like, I think we'll see some sort of interaction between Kylo and Leia in the film. I definitely think we'll see Kylo and Luke in some capacity. Come together. And I do think we'll see Luke and Leia together. And the reason I think that, the part in the sizzle reel where John Boyega is talking about how, you know, Ryan can't do a good Wookiee sound. Well, if you notice what they're filming.
But she can't.
Yeah, I think he's fine at it. Better than I can do. During that particular scene they seem to be filming, it looks like Chewie's on board the ship that Leia's on during a lot of the stuff we've seen. So if Chewie's there, there's a good bet Luke is there too. Right?
Like, right.
Because the movie starts with Chewie on Octu. So I really think we're going to see that reunion that we all want so badly.
I hope so. I really do.
And yeah, I mean, so I actually have been very good. I haven't been reading any spoilers lately. Although the last time I looked, there's not a lot available either. I'm almost tempted to try not to read any this time because I really think I'll enjoy the movie more if I know nothing.
I applaud you for saying that now, but give it a couple months ahead of the release date.
I mean, I'll be like, if it was November right now.
Hey Carl, how's that whole spoiler thing going? He's like,
and I'll just tell you the whole plot.
Like, spoiler dribbling out of the side of your mouth that you've just been consuming all day, and like, good. I don't know what you're talking about. You got spoiler crumbs there on your cheek.
If it was November, I could definitely see myself holding out. But since it's, yes, you're right. There are still several months until it comes out. So I'm going to see what happens. But I say that all to say what I'm going to speculate now is not in any way infused by any spoilers I've read. So I just want to be clear in case people are like, well, I know Carl reads spoilers, so I don't want him spoiling anything. I don't know anything. But my kind of speculation right now is why we might see Luke and Leia come back together is, right, the I think a lot of the first act of the film for Luke is going to be with Rey on Octu. Some sort of training. I don't think it's going to be Dagobah 2.0. I think it's going to be very different. But something is going to incite them to go back to meet up with the Resistance fleet. And that's where we're going to see, you know, Luke and Leia get involved in some way. And Luke, you know, makes a promise to help end this conflict or at least intervene. Right, he's done being on the sidelines.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope Luke reemerging back into the galaxy is helped by a nice swift kick in the pants from his sister. And you know Carrie wouldn't have it any other way, right?
Right. Right, exactly. Do you want to talk about a few of these like images that stood out?
Yes.
I mean, there's so many.
Yeah, there's so many great ones, but I think my first one is early on in the sizzle reel, and that's the shot that they're getting of Chewie sitting by the fire in front of the Falcon.
Yeah, that's mine too.
I love it. It's such a cool shot. It's obviously, you know, supposed to be Skellig Michael at night, but I don't know, just Chewie sitting by himself. Maybe that's R2 sitting next to him. I can't tell. But in front of this bonfire by the Falcon is just a neat shot.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Two things like stand out to me because of that shot. The first is, again, I just like the atmosphere of the shot. Like, it makes me think that, like, yes, we're in a folk tale again, right? Like, you're sitting by a campfire for a great story.
Yes.
Like, there's just something that evokes that feeling of, like, yes, like, this is going to be a really good story. But also, what I think it is kind of, like, in-universe, the fact that Chewie is alone, I didn't notice R2 myself. I'm waiting for, like, high-res shots to come out so we can really see things a little better. But
right.
To me, I wouldn't be surprised if this is an opportunity for Chewie to do some reflection and mourning, you know, of Han. Mm. Like, right? Because this picks up right after Force Awakens. So we have that very quick shot of Chewie kind of like, you know, mumbling by himself at the base, you know, the Resistance base at the end of Force Awakens. But this might be an opportunity for him. And, like, it's such a – Ahch-To is probably, like Dagobah, very infused with the Force, right? Like, it's a place where you might go for quiet contemplation in some way. So that scene to me really evokes that maybe Chewie's going to be going through some healing himself, which would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, you know, the idea that you get is, you know, he's off alone watching the ship. He is not involved in any way with what's going on with Rey and Luke. You know, that's them definitely separately. He's there to, you know, he's the getaway driver in a sense.
Right.
You wonder if he's even had a chance to talk to Luke at all.
That's a good point. You know. Yeah. I mean, I think he will at some point for sure.
Well, yes, at some point, but you know.
Yeah. I wonder if, I mean, the fact that Rey leaves him there to begin with, right? Like,
yeah.
Once she meets up with Luke though, I mean, she'll probably mention like, I'm here with Chewie and R2 and I don't know how quickly they'll meet up with one another. But there's a good chance, right? Like, if they have meet up, why is Chewie all the way down by the ship by himself, right? Like, so maybe he does kind of like camp out there initially on his own,
right?
So, good point. I don't know. Yeah.
Questions that need answering.
Yes.
All right. What's the next shot for you?
Well, it's the puffin birds, the porks, you know, porks. I mean, just seeing how cute they are. And I mean, we've already talked about them a little bit, so I don't say much, but yeah, it's just really cool that we're going to have like these adorable spiritual watchers. And I'm just really curious to see more about them. And, you know, cause we get two shots of them. I mean, the first one is just one very clearly like behind the scenes
in the creature shop.
But the other one is like, it's very clearly on Skellig Michael, like it's set up.
Yes. Yeah, no, and it makes you wonder, you know, how much of, you know, what sort of hybrid are they going to be of actual, you know, practical, you know, creature versus CG, you know, because they're obviously going to be at least partially practical, but, you know, I'm curious to see how they move and interact and how much of that is going to be practical, how much that's going to be CG, because you obviously know that enhancing a whole lot of this stuff with animation. So,
right. What else has stood out for you?
Let's see here. What was that? Towards the end, one of the things I really wanted to get out there towards the end of this is going to be, I'm trying to find the exact shot here for you. About 2:22 in the video, there's this big wide shot of the casino planet. The casino and the big, huge vaulted ceilings and everything have a very Coruscant feel from the prequels. And I think the fact that we're still getting that sort of design element in this is very exciting to me. Mm. So the fact that we're not shying away from that sort of design and the idea of the big vaulted ceilings and the Coruscant feel that we're getting to this high-end casino is definitely piqued my interest and makes me very happy. So
cool. Yeah, I was definitely going to mention that at some point too. Canto Bite, I think, is what it's called.
Yeah, Canto Bite.
Yeah. It also reminds me of like a Star Wars version of the casino in Casino Royale, the James Bond film.
Yes.
Right. And even the aliens we see here, right? Like everybody's dressed in like Star Wars versions of tuxedos.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's so many more cooler aliens in this video from that than we saw in the photos that came out in Vanity Fair, I have to say.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
The amount of variety in the aliens has definitely gone up in this video than what we saw in that Vanity Fair photo shoot, which makes me very happy, very excited. So
that was something I was definitely gonna bring up as well, is Canto Bite. I love the way it looks, and I like that connection you made to like it does really evoke some of the architecture of Coruscant.
Mm-hmm.
And I want a prequel feel in the sequel trilogy in some way. I'm so excited to see this planet, you know, and see what's going on there. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes.
The only thing, so I only have one quibble in this entire thing, and I'm just going to get it out there now and get it out of the way, and it's nothing new in my opinion. But a lot of the camera shots we see them doing is a lot of like tracking shots and zooming shots. I still think the Star Wars saga film should all be shot the Lucasian style of a documentary. I don't like when they do modern film shooting for Star Wars movies. I think it takes away from the mythological story element. Again, it takes us from being observers to participants. I don't want to be a participant. I want to be an observer. Like that's to me what Star Wars is a good story. You know,
yeah.
Like when you read a fairy tale at night to your little kid, you know, you're not trying to get your kid into the story. You're telling them a story, right? Like they're the observer, they're the listener. I feel like that's how George shot the six films. Well, not even him. I mean, Kirshner did it, and so did
Marquand.
Yeah, Richard Marquand. Thank you. Right. So JJ did it a lot of the film, but a lot of the film he didn't. So I don't like seeing a lot of those cameras moving, but we'll see what it's like. So again, like that's my only quibble. I think it's a quibble I'm going to have to learn to get over, because I don't think moving forward they're going to shoot them the Lucasian style, because Lucas is not involved at all, right? Like if he were in any way involved, he might. I mean, it's a good chance he said to Kirshner, like, "I want you to shoot it like this."
Oh yeah.
Same with Richard Marquand, you know, but like since he's not in any way part of the set, I think you have very strong visual directors like J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson. They're going to do how they envision it, which is fair. It's like they're the director. I personally don't like it. So for Star Wars, I don't mind it for any other film, but for Star Wars, I don't, because I think it takes away from that mythological feel. So, but that's my only little quibble. So sorry, just wanted to get that out there.
what's another shot for you?
I really like the shot of Adam Driver practicing fighting off two people.
Yeah.
With like staff elements, right? Like they're not the folks he's fighting aren't using lightsaber props. And the fact that they must be something that can not be cut through by a lightsaber, essentially.
Right. You know, something electro staff like.
Right. So, I mean, yes, Star Wars, it's very clear in the Star Wars canon that there are other weapons, other melee weapons that can go against the lightsaber without being chopped in half.
Yes.
I'm really excited to see Kylo in action, because I think he really needs to show us what a badass he is when it comes to fighting. Because, again, I still think it's a little disappointing that he lost in his duel to Rey. Again, like, I understand why he did, but, like, I really think to kind of redeem his warrior character, we need to see him do some, like, pretty cool stuff. So that made me really excited to see him going up against two different attackers.
Yeah. No, and then we get the shot of Daisy.
Yep.
Going against three. And it's like,
she's so cute in that shot though. Oh my God.
She does. She's like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, they all come together over her blade, and it's like, oh, you know, and it's, it, I wonder if that's, you know, actually going to happen in the movie, or if they're just messing around.
Right. Yeah. But, same with Adam Driver, right? Like, it may not be something strictly from
the Adam Driver shot looks like it's actual choreography.
That's true. Yeah.
This one could be, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
This is something with Daisy could be, but I'm not sure. But we're definitely getting, you know, some more saber to, you know, other weapon combat in this. So that makes me very, very excited.
Yeah.
So, yeah. One other cool thing I saw in here, it's a really shiny looking speeder that drives up in one of the shots at like 202. And I think that's Hux sitting in it, but I'm not sure. It could just be an extra. But there's like a really shiny silver speeder that on wheels to, you know, drive it through the set. I don't know. That looks cool.
Yeah, I can't tell who's in that. They almost look like Naboo Royal Guards to me.
Right, but he's wearing black, and you know, he's got like a hat sort of thing coming low over his face. It might be Hux, maybe, but I it could be anybody. It just could be an extra. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a cool looking speeder, that's for sure.
I like that we're. That we're getting all these new designs, and there looks like in that, you know, one of the shots towards the beginning when we get the sunset or the sunrise at the beginning, like right after they do the initial, you know, quick montage at the beginning, looks like we got some cool new speeders sitting outside too. So I'm interested to see some of those in light actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like that you gave timestamps. So, one of the ones that actually made me the most excited, and it's just, again, it's kind of just because it just looks so cool. It's at 143. It looks like Poe's just sliding or something, through the ground. It evokes such like a cool action sequence to me. Like there's like an intensity to it. There's an urgency, right?
He's headed for that trench.
Yeah, you don't power slide unless you have to, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, in baseball, you don't slide into the base if you've got plenty of, like, you're doing it because you gotta make it quick. So he is sliding there's just an urgency to it, and it makes me excited because we're going to see Poe in action. Like, yeah, we saw him do some cool stuff in Force Awakens in a fighter. I think we're going to get to see him do some really cool stuff outside of a fighter in this too, which makes me really happy.
He could be, you know, he's kind of like the James Bond of Star Wars. He can do anything.
Oh, he's the best looking guy in the movie. That's for damn sure.
Yeah,
Oscar Isaac is so handsome.
Yeah, there's like that trench. And we saw in another shot, I can't remember where exactly in this it is, Rian Johnson, you know, in the middle of the bottom of a trench, you know, looking up over the top of it. So you can assume that's the same set. And so he, you know, looks like Poe's sliding to drop into the trench, you know, we can assume escaping some sort of first order incoming fire of some sort. This could be on Crate.
Yeah. That's my guess, is that it's Crate.
Yeah.
I love Poe's outfit. It's Empire Strikes Back Han with a cool like resistance patch on his shoulder.
Yes.
It's really cool. And I think it makes so much sense that he would dress kind of like Han, because again, remember, go back to the Shattered Empire comic series. He's conceived, you know, during the aftermath of Endor, and his father is one of the commandos that fights for Han, and Poe grows up kind of idolizing Han. So yeah, it's pretty clear that he's going to be, you know, he might dress like him.
Yeah. He's definitely influenced by Mr. Solo.
Yeah. I mean, geez, when Attack of the Clones came out, I loved Hayden Christensen's haircut so much that I got a perm for it so that I could dress like him. I mean, it doesn't get much more ridiculous than that. I still love telling that story because it's so ridiculous.
It is so ridiculous. But
I get Poe's idea. Like, I get why he would. I just, oh my gosh, I love the way he looks.
Well, he has to have a cool new jacket because the one he had earlier is now Finn's. So he has to get a new wardrobe.
I like his new jacket way more, too. I think it's way cooler than the one that Finn has. I think it's great that Finn keeps it, though, because, again, it's a sign of their friendship.
Exactly. Yeah. One other shot I think is great is at 111 with this little, you know, dealer standing on the blackjack table. I don't know. This alien is cool. I like the idea that we're getting this tiny itty bitty alien that stands on the blackjack table
and bounces when something seems to slam down. Right.
Right. Yeah. Somebody slams down and gets mad. And he bounces and turns around to look in its direction. And it's like, oh man, what are you going to do when somebody gets mad? Right.
So. Yeah. Oh, that thing's great. Yeah. And also in that shot, the kind of looks like a female character over his head with like that, you know, kind of like shoulderless dress. It reminds me very much of something Padme would wear or something you'd see in a Coruscant nightclub, like from Attack of the Clones. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just
or something in the Senate, you know.
Yeah.
There's some of these costumes. It looks like we're going to get on Canto Bight are very opulent, which, you know, gives the whole idea of the opera scenes that we got in Revenge of the Sith, or maybe like you said, the nightclub, or even the Senate, depending on how over the top some of these characters go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm excited.
Well, I have another one I think is really cool. It's at 139, and it's the image of Luke, like, just kind of standing there in a very different outfit than he's wearing at the end of Force Awakens, right? It's kind of like a brownish, dark brown robe with, like, a black overcoat almost. Again, it's very evocative of his Return of the Jedi getup.
It's what he was wearing on that last shot in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's just really cool. And it's also, like, the music swells right there, too, during the sizzle reel, so it's really cool. And I'm talking about how, like, the legend characters are going to be changed. I just think it's a great shot of him, like observing probably Rey, but we don't know. But yeah, I mean, and I like that he's got that kind of like a sack over his shoulder. Like, you know, he's not your typical Jedi that we've met, right?
No,
because that failed. So yeah, I'm just really excited just to see what that's all about. Yeah, so that's really
what I'm saying. Yeah, no, it definitely he's got a couple of looks here, and this is definitely his more homespun, casual look. He's not wearing the dress robes that he had at the end of Force Awakens. So, but yeah, no, it definitely gives you the idea that he's been here a long time, and he may not be even thinking about leaving anytime soon, and it makes you wonder. Why, and what's the purpose of his stay other than wanting knowledge and learning the old secrets of the Jedi and in the first Jedi temple, but how much of that is going to be shaken up by Rey arriving? So right.
Yeah,
what changes for him with the arrival of Rey? So
yeah.
One other shot I gotta mention here is at 102, and it's not a shot of them filming anything, but it's our four main new characters for this movie hanging out backstage laughing. We got Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaacs, and Kelly Marie Tran there just hanging out, laughing and talking and hanging out, and I think seeing that is great, because if the chemistry is that good off screen, it's going to be great on screen. So
yeah,
I just love the shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's very like Peter Mayhew, Harrison, Mark and Carrie hanging out on a New Hope set, or really any of the sets. But I mean, if you can create that camaraderie behind the camera, it's going to just more infuse itself in front of the camera.
Yeah. And then isn't there a shot later on with Carrie and Oscar and
Oscar's kissing her on the cheek.
Yep.
Yep.
And is that her mom?
I don't think that's Debbie Reynolds.
No. Is that Debbie? I don't know.
I don't think so. It could be, but I don't think
it could be.
I don't think it is. I don't know. If you're listening, feel free to correct us.
Right.
Well, something else I want, and it's just because it's a quick look, but at 49 seconds in, we see Kylo with his mask on, thank God. I don't think he's going to wear it a ton, though, but he's got like what looks very much like a Darth Vader type of a cape.
Yes.
Which I am excited about. I mean, it's very clear that Kylo is obsessed with his grandfather, Darth Vader, not Anakin.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, obviously the mask itself already evokes Darth Vader. And now he's got a cape that even more so invokes Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's just a really cool element piece. Design choice. So, and costume.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely a larger cape that definitely larger than anything we saw in Force Awakens. So it sort of envelops him more like Vader's cape did. They're being very, very tricksy with this design, and I like it. I think it's good. I think it's cool. But that also looks like it could be the set where we see the smashed Kylo helmet in the trailer.
Yeah.
So.
Sure.
Just looking at the shiny floor. Who knows?
Who knows? Right. Well, it's what's so cool about, obviously, First Order set pieces is they all look pretty much the same, just like the Empire's did, which is great. Like,
yes.
It's all streamlined. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Anything else that really stands out to you? I'm about tapped out. So
I mean,
other than just the whole thing.
At 2:29, you get this cute little clip of Daisy and John Boyega dancing.
Yes.
On an interesting planet. I don't know what that planet is. I can't tell if that's snow or salt. I don't know. We'll find out, obviously.
I guess is it snow, but yeah. Salt would be cool, too.
Right. Crate is supposed to be like a salt planet or something, right? Like it's a
mineral that's true.
Planet, so I don't know if it's Crate or not. But I love Daisy's new robes.
Yes.
They look... Yes. I love this kind of like... gray, soft grayish blue type thing. It's a very similar outfit to what she has in Force Awakens, but it's noticeably different. It's much more Jedi-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? Where do we see her? Like, with her hood on, too.
Oh, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. It's at 2:30.
2:30.
Where she raises the lightsaber up, you know? It's so interesting that the movie's called The Last Jedi, but Rey looks very much like a Jedi by what's probably the end of the film. My guess is the top of the film, she's going to be wearing the same thing she wore all in Force Awakens because it picks up right after. But eventually, she really seems to take on the look of a Jedi.
Yes.
So I really like that, and I love those robes. Like, they're very simple, but they're very noticeably different. And the fact that she has a hood. I mean, there's nothing more Jedi than a hood.
So, right.
I remember one time I was... Oh, never mind. Never mind. It's about to be a TMI story. So, I think she very much looks the part of a Jedi. So
I do too. And that gives me a lot of hope. And it gets me very excited for this movie. So...
Yeah.
The Last Jedi may not be the last Jedi that, you know, in the way that we might think. So.
Right, right. Very exciting. Very, very, very exciting.
I can't wait for this movie now.
Yeah, I really can't either. I mean, and that's, like I said, at kind of the top of the show. I mean, this sizzle reel really got me excited. I mean, it really made me feel Star Wars again. I think we're over the hurdle of, like, having to recognize that we're going to have new main characters, right? Like, as much as we mm-hmm. wanted a lot of the legendary characters, like, it's not their story anymore. They're part of the story, but it's not their story.
Right.
And I think that we're over that hurdle now. Like, when we see, you know, Rey, Finn, Poe, now Rose, these new characters, Kylo, Cux, like, when we see them on the screen, it immediately evokes, like, yep, this is a Star Wars movie.
Yes.
Like, we don't need to see Luke. We don't need to see Han and Leia. Like, we can see these characters, I think, now and immediately, like, subconsciously be like, oh, great, it's a Star Wars film.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, we're definitely past that hurdle. We're definitely in the realm of having accepted this and moved into this being a new norm. for Star Wars, that these characters are here. And well, obviously, if we have Rey and Poe and Finn, yes,
it's their bromance.
then obviously it's Star Wars if we have these characters. You know, we're definitely in that realm, which is a good thing moving forward for The Last Jedi to be able to be in that area. And it's, I'm just so excited now, and I need to see this movie.
Only a few more months. Well, let's see. It's almost, what's today's date? July 17th. So it comes out December 18th. So it is approximately, 5 months away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Less than half a year. It'll be here before we know it.
That's still so far and yet so short.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't wait for our next trailer, which we probably won't get till the fall, probably like late September or October.
Right.
I would think we'd get it by October, though. I think November, you're not going to get one a month ahead of time. I mean, basically, when November rolls around, we're going to get all these like short commercials, like crazy again, which are fine. But yeah, I think the next big trailer we get will probably be September or October.
I agree.
So, because remember, Force Friday is coming up in September. Like it's and it's like on the early side of September too. Do you remember the exact date? I don't.
No, I don't.
I know it's the like earlier half of September though. So, we may get it before that. I kind of doubt it, but I know we'll get it sometime early fall.
So, sounds good.
I can't wait. Can't wait. I'm so glad we got to talk about this.
Me too. Me too. Glad to get on with you again. So,
yes, I know. Well, I mean, so like I said, I recorded a great Tales of Larian episode with Bobby Gordon just late last week. So I'm going to post that on Thursday, our normal release day. So you'll get two Wampa's Lairs this week. And Bobby's tale is fantastic. He's a great guy. I don't know if there'll be anything next week, but
I've got something in the works.
Excellent. So you guys are going to be set through the month of July, and I'll be back the first week of August with my friend Greg. We've been putting together a really great episode, and then Jason and I'll be back at it in no time, less than a month.
Yes.
And I got some exciting news about Patreon, but I'm going to wait till we come back together on that, Jason, in August.
Sounds good to me. All right, anything else?
No, I'm all sizzled out.
Sizzle, 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 sizzle. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 239, The Last Jedi Approaches. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.